Hello and welcome back to Techonomics. I'm host Jason Middleton. It's that time of year in sports when professional clubs start wooing would-be free agents, signing players to big contracts, with players switching teams in a way that can put stress on the fans of certain teams as personalities and team chemistry changes. And I'm not talking about the hot stove season for baseball. I'm talking a little esports.
Now you've got organizations that are scrambling to fill roster spots, that are competing with each other for salaries. And in regions like China and South Korea, you're talking a lot of money. You're talking close to $500,000 to $1 million.
Esports is gaining not only notoriety, but audience. And with both of those comes revenue. Lots of it. By 2017, esports gaming alone is likely to top $1 billion in revenue. And esports is only a slice of the gaming industry. These are the professionals, the paid-to-play class of e-athlete. For the non-professionals, there's a different, huge, and growing platform called Twitch. You may recall Amazon buying Twitch for a cool $1 billion a couple of years ago. Now, we'll talk to Twitch in a couple of weeks, but for this chat, we're sticking with the pros and the editor of esports at ESPN.com.
Ryan Garfat, senior editor, ESPN.com.
Hey, let's start with your Twitter feed, Ryan, at ESPN_esports. Here it is. Free agent no more, at the moon 112, has been signed by at Misfits GG as the org's first ever FGC player. Read more. There's a bit.ly link here. help me translate that so that I can understand a little bit what's happening with this.
What's going on right now is basically the Wild West. All or most esports professionals are on year-to-year contracts. They do not have multi-year deals for the most part yet. They are trying to fix that. And so the Moon is now signed to a team now, and that allows him marketing and allows him to associate with a franchise and hopefully a lot more money for him. He plays Super Smash Brothers, a Nintendo game. But what's really going on right now is the free agent season in League of Legends, which is the major esport game out there.
Right.
All right now, we don't know who's going to be on what team, which is crazy. You know, and in other sports, we've got guys that have multi-year deals, and so the entire roster isn't blown up for the most part, unless they're rebuilding.
But there's a lot of shuffling of players, right? I mean, are there long-term contracts in esports right now for these professionals?
No. For the most part, there are not. So, for instance, you've got a League of Legends team that has five players, an alternate, and a coach. The second best team in the world, the Rocks Tigers, said that they are allowing all of their players to explore other options, and four of the six had said that they are going to be leaving the team. So now you've got organizations that are scrambling to fill roster spots, that are competing with each other for salaries. And in regions like China and South Korea, you're talking a lot of money. You're talking, you know, close to $500,000 to $1 million.
Right. And as an industry, esports is projected to be a $1 billion a year business by 2019. There's a lot of money at stake here. And it seems like there's also a lot of audience and a lot of, well, there's this big spectator aspect to this that maybe some of my audience, at least, is missing out on. Can you speak to a little bit to the spectator part of it?
We just had the World Championship at Staples Center, and it sold out. The spectator thing, and then just after that was BlizzCon with roughly 25,000 people at the Anaheim Convention Center seeing five different championships in esports. And the spectator experience is actually probably the biggest draw. You think of online games as something that you could watch from the comfort of your home, but to actually be inside an arena watching the game together is something visceral, and I think that you're only going to see that increase.
You've teed it up to here, and I kind of want to step back just for a moment, if I could, because
sure.
I read a story from March 1st of this year where editor-in-chief of ESPN.com, Chad Millman, said that the ESPN is going to double down on esports. Now, we've come a long way since March. How has that doubling down gone so far? And then after that, my follow-up is going to be, what's next?
Yeah, ESPN is doubling down in its coverage in that we're expanding our staff. And in 2017, we're looking to continue our expansion to get deeper into the games that are most important to our audience. And I think our first year was a lot of learning experience about what worked and what didn't. There are so many games out there, we can't cover everything. And I think that our first learning experience is what we can't do as much as what we can.
I know this is a competitive space, and I'm not going to ask you to play any business practice cards, if you will. But ESPN is up there. Twitch is up there. There's other headliners that are looking at this as a real opportunity to not only acquire audience, but also acquire revenue. You and I have spoken before on this show during the League of Legends tournament, actually, and that's a huge game. That one has probably got some name recognition. What other games are up there right now? And then let's bird dog and see what's coming up.
The big one is League of Legends, as you mentioned. Dota 2, which is another multiplayer online battle arena, is the second biggest one. You've got fighting games like Street Fighter. You've got first-person shooters like Counter-Strike. Those are the big ones right now. And the next big one is called Overwatch. And this is a game. It's a first-person shooter that Blizzard released in the spring. It's a very popular game. And this is probably the first video game that was designed to be a high-level esport from the very beginning. And Blizzard just announced something that's going to be attractive to stick and ball fans is geolocation. So the Overwatch League, which is going to start next year, will have cities as their home bases.
Ooh.
So you'll be able to root for the Los Angeles whatevers and the Chicago whatevers. And so right now, the competitions are concentrated in areas where esports is popular, you know, like up in San Francisco, up near you, and Los Angeles and Seattle and New York. Other areas of the country have not been able to see major esports events, and that's sort of what Overwatch is going to try to fix.
I have to mention that we've talked with a lot of analysts and entrepreneurs in the virtual reality space over the last few months, and everybody sees this coming a lot faster than even they had anticipated, and they're supposedly on the bleeding edge of this technology and in this business space. Is there some kind of a merger or a possibility with esports and virtual reality coming up?
Yes, I think it'll start in the spectating part of things. I've seen demos on virtual reality for Dota and for League of Legends. It works really well for first-person shooters. Well, I think what you'll see first is these streamers and broadcasters adding virtual reality to their suite of watching options.
I see.
And then the actual professional level esports is as a way out yet. At every esport event I've been to, they have VR demos, and I think that everybody's really curious to see. But, you know, we're talking sponsored, high-level professional gamers,
right.
and it's going to take a bit for that scene to adopt.
It seems like these are professionals, and like you mentioned at the top of this interview, a lot of money at stake. These contracts are no small thing, and there's a lot of free agency that happens. We're in the middle of a hot stove season, apparently, with players trading teams or choosing new teams. That chemistry has to gel. It seems like you're not sitting at home. This is not a couch potato kind of a thing, and I keep thinking about this really great book but a really crappy movie called Running Man, and I'm wondering, are we going to get the perspective where these guys are going to be like so fit and trained, we're new gladiators, I guess, in a virtual reality or augmented reality sense? I mean,
the question often comes back to health and physicality in esports. I got to tell you, I was just at the Team Immortals house. We just covered an event called Scouting Grounds, which is sort of a combine for League of Legends. It was really great to see amateurs sit in the chairs of their favorite pros and actually play on their machines. And we were at the Immortals house, and I took a picture of their kitchen because it was creatine and supplements and, you know, the ninja blenders. And one of their coaches is actually a sports psychologist. If you think about it, these guys are practicing 8 to 14 hours a day, maybe one day off. They need to have mental and physical acuity at all times. And for a game like League of Legends that can go as long as an hour plus, you know, at a high level of competition, then you're doing, best of five. You know, you're looking at a lot of endurance. And all of these guys are wicked smart and take care of their bodies. They have to, otherwise they wouldn't be able to compete.
It's a fascinating space, and it's growing so rapidly. Congratulations on the anniversary of your site coming up on ESPN.com/esports. Ryan, thanks again. Let's check in a few months and see how things are going once the season starts to get ramped up again, okay?
I'd love to do it.
That was Ryan Garfat, editor of esports at ESPN.com. That site is celebrating its anniversary of esports coverage in January. There are links at facebook.com/techonomicsradio. And we also have links to this and all of our segments at KGORadio.com/Techonomics. Coming up after this little break, we get in the Wayback Machine and look at an inventor who built the original tools that have led to podcasts, smartphones, Wi-Fi, basically modern communication. This is Techonomics, and I'm Jason Middleton. Come on back for a little more on the father of radio and more, Marconi.